show.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at Honor Your Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at Eric at On Air Brands so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I'm your most happy and humbled host, as usual, Eric Cabral. I have with me today a dude, and I'm glad, third time's a charm, brother. We've been through tech issues and scheduling challenges, but we're finally here today. And I want to welcome to the show, Nick Tarasio. How are you doing, brother?
Doing well. Doing well.
Yeah, man. I'm looking to get...
I was just going to say it's Nick Tarasio.
Nick Tarasio.
There you go.
It's funny because I had it phonetically, but apologies. I do, even though I've been doing this for I don't know, 5.5, 6 years now, still do rookie moves, man. I recorded an episode where my engineer was like, dude, you didn't have the right mic selected. I'm like, oh, crap. You know, it happens from time to time. I would hope that the guest would tell me, but, you know, sometimes like we just roll. But yeah, absolutely, brother. So for those who don't know, Nick is the host of The Dream Beyond. He's also the CEO of Ventura Air Services. So he is a musician too and a host of a ton of things where he aims to inspire people from diverse backgrounds to help them find deeper personal fulfillment. His background in private aviation has been exposed to perspectives from successful individuals that have led him to believe that true success is often different from what is perceived externally. He has a unique perspective on achieving dreams, processing past lessons, and taking inspired action. So I just want people to get a flavor for who you are, brother, less what you do. But we're going to get into that as well. So the first segment of the show, man, is the eureka moment in life or business that caused a major change or pivot.
Man, oh, man, there were so many. Probably the most recent one that I think most people can relate to is just the experience of the pandemic as it relates to business. And for me, more importantly, it was the experience of the pandemic as it relates to general safety. So I think like before 2020, I was pretty conservative. It was always like, I just want to mitigate risk at all times. Like I want to make sure that all the moves I make, I'm never going to wipe myself out. I'm never going to go too aggressive. And you know, you hear these stories of like the Elon Musk are like going all in, taking all my PayPal money and just spending it all on space. So I never did that. And always was protecting that nest egg. And then when 2020 happened and the pandemic happened, it was like that first month where everything stopped. I was like, wow, even despite all of this protective behavior and this idea that like, oh, we're always going to be just have a safe little protection zone here. It all could have gone away, right? It all could have gone to zero. Our whole industry could have gotten wiped out. All of our savings could have gotten wiped out. The business could have been gone pretty quickly. And I think the lesson for me in that moment was like, if you can't protect it at all costs, you might as well do what you want to do. Because at any point, external factors could knock you on your ass. So you might as well swing for the fences and do what you want to do. Again, not be crazy, not take, like, you know, don't necessarily blow the whole thing up in the process. But it was kind of in that moment that I was like, wow, I've played myself safe into potential bankruptcy. And in that, we got, you know, we basically had this opportunity where it was like, all right, well, what do you want to do? Everyone else is holding their cash and trying to protect themselves and figuring out, like, fire people or whatever, lay people off furlough, sell assets, whatever you need to do. And I was like, well, if it's all going to go to zero anyway, you might as well do it in style. So let's buy planes, let's hire talent, let's just plan for the thing to maybe do a turnaround. Who knows what'll happen? And of course, we were pretty lucky. About a month and a half into that, everything went the other way and the private jet industry experienced the biggest boom we've ever seen. And we were able to basically 3X the company over the period of the pandemic. And again, it was just that single mindset shift of sometimes playing it safe is actually moving backwards.
Hmm. I'm going to go deep real quick here because I know we can. You and I have had multiple conversations at this level in the past. What was I know you're a spiritual guy, and you had a quote I wrote down last time we had a conversation. You said entrepreneurship is a spiritual practice. How much did that come into play during those times, man? I imagine it was really rough. Maybe you thought things would, you know, like you said, would fold, or, you know, your identity attached to that business, all sorts of things. I've been through this. Entrepreneurs who have been through it for a while experience downs. How did spirituality come into play during those times?
You know, again, I don't know if this is true for most people, but I imagine that your source of sustenance is pretty close to touching on the spiritual, right? It's like this idea for some people, like, I don't know if you felt this, but I imagine with most entrepreneurs or most people in business, whether you lose your job or lose your business, that feels like death. It really does feel like your survival kicks in, right? Like your amygdala is completely hijacked by the experience. Mm-hmm. Now, we live in the West, so most people would say, like, actually, are you going to die if your business fails? Are you going to die if you go bankrupt? Probably not. I imagine you have people that love you. You're going to sleep on a couch or someone's going to take care of you, whatever that is. But it's like this chance to really face that deepest fear is like, can we actually provide for ourselves and the people we love? Like what's our, you know, did I just lose my sense of purpose? So who am I in this moment, right? Who am I when I really look into the core of the void of there may be, like I may have just blown my entire life up because I didn't pay attention to the signs or I didn't play the game well. So in that essence, I think that the pandemic for me was that moment of like, go ahead, look at yourself in the mirror. Who are you? Who are you in this moment? And what decisions are you going to make? Are you going to lay down and die? Are you going to fight? Are you going to embrace it and find joy in this incredibly uncomfortable experience? Are you going to feel hope for the future? So to me, it was kind of that eureka moment came along with that of like, if you win in the end, how would this be part of your story? So why don't you live it that way? Why don't you live it like this was an incredible, exciting inflection point in one of the most interesting stories playing out in your life?
Yeah, it's interesting when things get thrown your way like that and you have to figure it out. And it's hard not to see from the other side, like how are people going to perceive me, right, if I fail here? Did any of that come to mind? Did you struggle with any of that at all?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's, you know, I'm the second generation of a family business, right? So like looking in my parents' eyes and going, sorry guys. And look, I'll be very honest. I was always afraid of that. I've always been afraid of being second generation of my dad's dream and saying like, I don't want to be the one to let the dream die in front of them, in front of my siblings, in front of all of our employees. I didn't want to be that person. But there was another part of me that said, if you were ever going to do it, now is the time. Because the one time where people would probably go like, that makes sense, is the pandemic, right? It was like the one time where I was like, I think the external story is a strong enough alibi. Whereas if I blew it up in another environment, it felt like a dumb idea. It was like, oh man, like everyone's going to look at me and go, you blew it. And so that's partly why I had the confidence to take a big move. I was like, you know what? If we're gonna fail, let's fail gloriously. But if it does turn around, let's ride that wave. I'm done with this. Like I'm just done playing safe, playing small, and trying to do again. Going back to like a spiritual practice is at some point we have to face impermanence. At some points we're going to have to face the fact that like we're going to end, everything's going to end. How do you want it to go? Do you want to go quietly, scared like a mouse, or do you want to go out like a lion? So that's kind of the way I saw it, was like, I just want to, if I'm going to do it, I want it to be glorious.
I love it.
Because you easily could have been like, you know what? This is, like you said, the prime opportunity, the excuse to use to go serve my passions, to go pursue those. You know, you're a musician. You could easily go, I'm going to go back to the music world. I'm going to start, diving full head on into that stuff instead. Instead, you did this. I'm sure there's a lot of people that that rely on you and your decisions. You know, a lot of employees, a lot of staff, a lot of just people around you, families that are relying on what we do and decisions we make in order to put food on the plate. So I appreciate you, manning up and standing and saying, I'm gonna tackle this head on. We've talked in the past about this, dude. I want to dive in a little bit because we relate at this level where, I came from a very sort of modest upbringing, lower middle class. I wasn't around wealthy people. But when I started investing in real estate, I was like, oh, wow, I'm around all these ridiculously wealthy people who have a different mindset in abundance. And you cut similar cloth where you told me you and your parents, having an aviation company had access to the wealthy or the rich types of people. But it was kind of foreign for you. And then you started to learn as you were growing up. Can you kind of expand on that experience a bit?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go real wide and then I'll pull it back in. So, I remember maybe 10 years ago, I saw some YouTube video that was about self-esteem, and the measure was basically like your self-esteem correlates to your relative success of your same-sex parent. And also your relative success of the people you went to high school with, with one caveat. So again, like basically what that's saying is if you're more successful than, in my case, my dad, and I'm more successful than the norm of the people I went to high school with, I'm going to feel pretty good about myself. The caveat was never be friends with billionaires. I thought that was an interesting thing because billionaires live in such a crazy distortion of what most people's experience is to resources and self-protection and all that stuff. So growing up around people that were in that strange, very, very small class of people that have so much power, influence, wealth, and on and on and on, really hard to feel good about yourself, right? I was just always like, man, I am so poor relative to the people that we serve in many cases. And it really did kind of have this sense of like less than, not enough, I'm not worthy if. And I can't help but feel that there was a part of me that was like, that is my standard for where I need to get to. Now, it took me a long time to realize that, it's actually why the podcast exists that I do, is that I was climbing the wrong mountain. I was using the measures of those people as my version of success. And yet I remember people would come in, we'd have these customers, very successful people would come in and say to my mom, wow, you guys have real wealth. And I didn't really get what they were saying. I didn't understand what they meant. And I didn't even hear them say, like, you have a great family. But that just didn't land for me emotionally. And it was later that it really sunk in that it was like, oh, yeah, like all of us vacation together. We all love each other. We fight. We resent each other like any family does at times. But the thing is, we still stand for each other. We still fight for each other. And we really do care and take action for each other. And it was interesting to see that even people with all the external resources in the world could identify in us that we were like a family of, we were wealthy in love. Mm. And it just, to me, love was something that, I just didn't know it as a kid. I just didn't understand it. So again, like at a very basic level, I was so tethered to the external realities. And now I'm like, actually, I'm quite fortunate that I got to see that because how far into your life do people chase external success? Some people never do. And it's super impressive that they have those, whether it's a spiritual community, religious community, the right parenting, the right school system. I don't know exactly what that is. Or like Eastern cultures. I think Eastern cultures don't necessarily do that in most cases. But I could very much see that I was absolutely in an environment where I could have ended up doing that and being, my greatest fear was like, I'm going to take my last breath. And in that last breath, when I'm 60, 70, 80, 90, whatever the year is, I'm going to go like, wow, I regret the whole thing. It was all bullshit. Mm-hmm. And that always really scared me. And I was like, you know what? There's a curse that comes along with that much power. There's a curse that comes along with that much wealth. And I didn't understand it then, but over time, and that's part of the spiritual journey for me, is like, especially if you're multi-generational, if you didn't earn it and someone gave it to you, my God, that comes with a lot of burden.
Yeah. Yeah. The burden, the responsibility, the expectations, you're absolutely right. So in a sense, you know, hopefully you and I are creating enough wealth to pass on to the next generation, and educating them to the degree where, you know, they know what to do with it. You know, the next generation can figure out, which makes me think about your father and your parents as they were, you know, start. How did your dad was in aviation? He was a pilot. Is that what, how did that all start?
No, my dad was in computers. He started out as a car mechanic, then went to computer business in like the, I guess it was the late 70s, early 80s, when computers were like these big bricks that were $13,000 and had little green periscope screens. And his business partner, they were supposed to go to a computer conference from Long Island to Trenton, New Jersey. And my dad said, I don't really want to drive in traffic. He's like, no, we're going to fly there. And my dad then ends up in this little four-seater airplane flying over to this computer conference with this guy. And he's like, oh, of course you're a pilot. You're in the military. And he goes, no, I took flight lessons here in Republic Airport after I got out of the military. My dad was like, I didn't know you could do that. So very shortly thereafter, like my dad got obsessed with aviation, got his pilot's license, traded his half of the computer business to his partner and took on the plane that his partner owned. And it's just like, you know, sometimes your calling taps you on the shoulder and you listen and you just do it. And I mean, it makes no sense. Like when I think of the fact that my dad did this, it was such a ballsy move, but you know, his heart just lit up with this idea of like, I just know this is what I'm supposed to do with my life and I'm not going to question it. Now, I admire that so much because I'm not that way. I'm always like, well, let me think of all the contingency plans. But yeah, it was like truly one flight in and he was like, this is going to be my life now.
Wow. That is wild. So as a kid, how many siblings did you have?
I have three.
There's three. I mean, that must have been wild for the three of you to grow up with your dad, you know, being a pilot. Like how often were you able to jump in a plane and like just, you know, that's not typically normal for kids to have access to, you know, moving any and going anywhere, you know, at the drop of a hat like that.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny how it was normalized. So like my first day of third grade, the teacher had asked us what we did over the summer and everyone was like, oh, I went here, I went there, I went to a lake, I whatever. And I said, I flew a plane. And she goes, no, Nick, you flew in a plane. I said, no, I flew the plane. And I was so insistent that she called my mom and said I was basically a pathological liar. And my mom said, no, Nick not only flew the plane, he logged the time towards his pilot's license.
How old were you?
That's third grade. So what is that? Nine?
Yeah, about
10?
Yeah,
I don't even know how old ages are. But it was like, that was actually the moment. So imagine this, like that's the moment when I go, oh, my life is different. Because, you know, like people have boats, right? They drive their car to their family boat and they go out on the boat. I just assumed everyone drove their cars to their planes and went out in their planes. I didn't know that it was all that different. And it was in that moment that I was like, oh, something's different. Mm. Like something about this is unique. But I mean, my earliest memories were being in little airplanes. So it was just part of my life. It was something that I always experienced. And again, this was not like private jet luxury where I've heard people that grew up on private jets and they talk about the first time that they went on a big plane that had lots of people. And they're like, this is so funny. There's all these other people on our plane. Like I've heard those stories. That was not the experience I had. I honestly saw like we had a minivan, we had a Dodge Caravan, and we had a plane with six or seven seats in it. And it was just like you took your seven seat car to your seven seat plane and you flew places.
Oh, wow. That is wild. So do you feel that your father was grooming you to take over the business or did it just come naturally for you? Interest in jumping in?
Okay. So I think that there's like this Italian thing where, you know, the Italian father has whatever, a landscaping company, a pizza place, like whatever that thing is, whatever that like real blue collar entrepreneurial effort is. And it's just like your family helps you. I mean, that is just like the way it was. I don't think that there was any grooming in the way of he never said like you should go to business school or you should get a degree in finance or there was none of that stuff. It was more like, hey, I need your freaking help. Mm. Like, get out to the airport and help me out when you've, you know, like if there was a snow day as a kid, those are fun days for kids, right? Snow day, we're going to have fun. Not for my family. We had a snow day. All the kids went out to the airport with shovels.
Wow.
And we had to shovel out all the airplanes and take the snow off the top of them. So we were like a, you know, I understand that he did what he had to do. And we were part of the workforce in a lot of ways. It was like raising four kids in a very low margin, hard business to run. Like, we all just contributed in whatever way we could. That said, he did tell me, I asked him recently, this must have been 3 years ago. I said, you know, Dad, how come you never kind of sat me down and gave me the talk about like how to navigate this? And he said, even in kindergarten, I looked at you and I said, oh, he's going to be a shark. He's like, I just knew it. I knew it in your nature. I could see like the way you just moved through the world, you were going to be a shark. And I'm like, is that like a good thing, a shark? He's like, yeah, you know, like just like someone who's like, they've got it. Like they just move powerfully through the world. And so I think he saw the potential that was there. And I mean, the truth of the matter is when you have a dad who works all the time because, you know, they're just trying to keep food on the table, you almost do anything to get their validation, right? So I was like, I knew that my dad would appreciate me if I could be good at the things that he loved. And this is not necessarily a good thing. This is like enmeshment and codependency and probably all other psychological issues that anyone has a background in that is going to be like, that's not healthy, Nick. True. Probably true. But in the same way, it's like, I don't regret any of it. I understand that we all had to move through the things we had to move through. And there's like a familial lineage and healing that goes on later in life as we've been able to address like, yeah, this whole business was a proxy for their love. Mm-hmm. Like when I think back to why I did it, it was my parents were busy. They were working their asses off. And in my young brain, I figured if I could help them and make the business stable and make them not worry about money, they'll have more time to love me.
Wow.
I mean, it's like truly like what a childish thought, but that really was the driver of it is, and you know, look, I don't think I'm all that unique. When I talk to other people's entrepreneurial journeys, so many people, if they really get down to it, when we get talking deeply, they're like, oh, I just never felt like I was enough. And I figured how much money or how big of a business or how much impact do I need to have in the world so I could finally feel like I'm worthy. And I think, you know, you talk to enough business people and you realize, again, it's never been about the external success. It's all about the way we see ourselves, our own self-esteem, the love we feel for, you know, for ourselves. But man, it's a fun way to try anyway.
Yeah, man.
That's so deep, dude. You're calling all these memories of conversations I've had that revolve exactly around that, trying to get your parents' love and you don't realize it. And then you land where you are as a result of all that. But, you know, things have worked, you know, seemingly for you and being the CEO of Ventura. And you said to me once, and I want you to kind of expand on this. Your purpose is the intersection of your trauma and your talent. So clearly you were saying, you were dropping a lot of stuff when we had our previous conversations. But I've loved that quote that I jotted down from you. It's like, your purpose is the intersection of your trauma and your talent. If you could, you know, sort of explore that for a little bit, where that came from.
Yeah. Oh man, this has gotten bigger for me in the last 2 weeks. So I originally heard the quote from Jamie Wheel. He's an incredible author, and I got a chance to spend some time with him at this camp he runs every year. And that was kind of the first time that someone like, you know, the two big questions I think most people have at some point in their life is what's my purpose or how do I experience happiness, fulfillment, contentment, whatever. I just want to like feel like I belong here and love my life. And I also want to know that I'm doing something of value. So I'm part of like, I'm a contributor to the system. So both of those things have plagued me. And I've heard all these like stupid, you know, Hallmark card versions of the answers. And when I heard that, I was like, no, this is right. Like, I just know it, that your purpose is at the intersection of your trauma and your talent. And the reason I haven't been able to find it is for the reason I think most people can't find their purpose is that we only want to look at our talent, right? It's so much easier just to say like, what am I good at? Let me just do the thing I'm good at for the rest of my life. It makes me feel so good about myself. But it really is a lot of like, I'm doing that thing because people like that I do it. People love how, like, I get told how talented I am. I like, for me, that's like music. Music was so easy for me. in so many ways. And it was like, if I ever needed to feel better about myself, play a song. Someone's going to tell me they love me or I'm amazing or whatever bullshit external thing it was. But I mean, it's appreciated. It was just more like, it doesn't actually change my experience of who I am. I just lied to myself and said someone else cares about me. So again, I think our talent only is a very limited way to try to carry ourselves through life, because it does become a human doing, right? The thing I do is what I drive value from, versus who I am is what I drive value from, and or derive value probably. And the other side of that, so it's like, okay, well, if you look in your shadow, if you look in the things that were hard for you, if you look in the stuff that was like icky and scary, this goes back to like the spiritual path of entrepreneurship, like doing the hard thing and having to face your demon. I believe it's the combination of those two. So I'll tell you, this is interesting. 2 weeks ago, I had a moment where I was meditating, and what came through in the meditation was, I kept on thinking like, what is my trauma? Like I still don't exactly know what the trauma is. If I had to pick a primary trauma through my life, and the message came through so hard, it said, oh, Nick, it's Ventura. You didn't know that the company was your trauma? Mm. And I was like, wait, what do you mean that's my trauma? And it's like, you never had safety as a child. Like your family was always worried about running out of money. You saw your parents struggling. Your dad was angry or stressed or scared. Your mom was afraid, trying to raise four kids, trying to do this. Like there were challenging times. You never knew if a week later, and here you are, you gave your whole life to this thing. You gave up all your dreams to go and run this business. Like this is a black hole for you for most of your life. This was something that took your life force and scared the living shit out of you the entire time. You never got the safety you were looking for. And I was like, whoa, that is a reframe of what this business has been. And then in that moment, I was like, so what the hell is my purpose? And it was like, you know your purpose. It's the spirituality of business. Mm. It's that like you as a child, even not understanding it in your tiny child brain and even all the psychological screwed up reasons that you did it, like if you could choose this path, you'd do it again, because you know that you're becoming the leader you always wanted to be because of this path you were on. Like you're becoming the person who, there's so many people that give their life away to entrepreneurship and business and are trying to take care of stuff. And it's like, look, you've been given lessons, you understand things that other people don't, and you can help people heal in their own relationship to business just by talking about it, just by being in that community. I was like, wow, that is never where I saw myself. But like this path you just said, you know, entrepreneurship is a spiritual journey or spiritual path. I'm like, yeah, I really do think that my purpose is the spirituality of business.
Mm, I love it, dude. I love this conversation and I love that. And folks, anyone who's listened to my show, I don't typically have hour-long conversations with the guests prior to the interview. Nick insisted that we do that. And I'm like, I should do this more often because I know so much more about you than behind the scenes that people know, just because we've had a lot of deep conversations. I want to shift towards music and your love for music. And sure. It's like, choose your own adventure here, brother. How did music come to play in terms of structure for you in the business? And then also, I want to get into sound meditation. I know you're jamming on that. I know that's a big part of your life now, and sound, you know, being a sound mediator and sound facilitation. So I'd love to segue into that. But yeah, let's get into sort of like, how did it relate to your business in terms of sort of some structure or foundation, if at all?
You know, it took me a long time to find any crossover between music and aviation. And it actually, so I used to spell my name two different ways. My given name was N-I-C-K or Nicholas, the full version. And when I was a teenager, I decided I was in a heavy metal band, and I was like, you can't mix heavy metal and private jets and flight schools. Like no one wants to see that part of me that was like dark and cursed a lot in rock music. So I spelt my name N-I-K for that, which, you know, you could see now my name is just N-I-K. And it really wasn't until maybe 3 years ago or 2 years ago, I decided I'm going to put to death the C that was unnecessary in my name and actually become more of the artist. I decided like I have two paths. I could be the business guy, which was N-I-C-K, or I could be the artist, N-I-K. And I was like, you know what? What's more interesting, having a business guy be a musician or a musician running a business? Right? To have an artist run a business, especially an aviation company. So I said, I want to be the artist running a business. I believe in my artistry. I dream of being an eccentric artist someday where I just like have that ability. Like, I don't care what anyone thinks about me. I know I'm weird. Like, that's my dream for myself. So I really fully embrace that. And when I started doing the sound meditation work, And just like for context, if you ever had like a sound bath or anything like that, that's pretty much what it is, right? I'm playing a bunch of instruments to create a space for people to meditate, go deep within themselves and know themselves, which is, I think, for most people in the West, especially, we have cut people off at the neck. They just live up in their heads. They don't really know their bodies. They suppress their emotions. They have all types of illnesses that are for potentially emotional or traumatic experiences they haven't addressed. So just as a frame, like this is what, when I say sound meditation, it's how do I use music to help people get so tapped into their body and to fully feel their somatic experience, right? And I only really started doing that, I think that was 2021 when I started doing that. And so again, music was a divergent path. It was completely separate for 41 years. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. The reason I'm a good sound facilitator is because I learned how to do this flying charter jets, right? Like I was there to take people on a journey. And in that journey, some people were afraid. Some people threw up. Some people were excited. Some people were not present, right? And it was like, how is it like, you know, we talk about like co-regulation, is that like when you're, imagine you walk into an airplane and the pilot looks nervous. I guarantee you're going to get nervous very quickly, right? Because our nervous system, we're looking to that person to set the tone. And our entire nervous system is like, you are my referential point that I'm going to anchor to. So I noticed that if I, you know, a lot of people are afraid of airplanes and a lot of people are frustrated. How could I be joyous, caring, compassionate when I'm flying an airplane to just bring that safety and that comfort of a true luxury experience for someone flying on an airplane? And I was like, wait a minute, this is exactly what sound meditation is. I have a bunch of people coming here that are frustrated, they're late, they're not present in their life, some business shit is pissing them off. Like this is their moment of going on a journey inward instead of outward, which is generally what I did. And I was like, oh, I've trained on this my whole life. I know exactly how to do this. So I brought all of my experience of flying airplanes and just put it into sound and found that when you're a pilot, it's actually not about you, right? Like these people love being pilots. The ego, I'm a pilot, look what I do. In reality, you're there in service of someone else's journey. Mm-hmm. You're there to usher someone to some place that they want to or need to go. If I was like, guys, look how good I am at landing, they'd be like, dude, what? Shut up. Like, shut up and do the thing I want you to do. Now, prior to sound meditation, I was all about put me up on stage. Again, I want everyone to love me. I want to play the right songs. I'll play Chris Isaac Wicked Game and see you melt and you could project your fantasy of what the masculine is onto me. And I'll actually buy into the bullshit and think I'm special. So it was a lot of like me not listening, just me making noise, hoping I could make enough noise so that I'd be worthy or write the perfect song so you'd love me. With sound meditation, I was like, actually, it's not about me anymore. It's about creating something for you and me being the background experience to you knowing yourself. Like I'm a soundtrack to the movie of your life.
Wow.
And that's a real shift. That's a real shift in perspective. So I'd say like learning how to hear instead of learning how to play was the gift of sound meditation. Really listening to the room, listening to the individual, even listening to the instruments and letting them tell you what they want to be and how they want to be played. So yeah, it's only the last 2 years that things are starting to converge. And my dropping the C in my name was really the demarcation of, I feel whole in my life and I no longer have to hide my artistry and my spirituality from the part of me that runs a business anymore. Still scares the shit out of me though, by the way.
Dude, yeah, I love that. I love the merge and how you found the similarities between, you know, your business and what you're now doing, which is, I feel, your passion. And the being the usher, being the... the pilot, literally, to someone's life journey, being the maestro, so to speak. In music, and I'm I love music all my life, dude. And you don't realize this until it plays out over time that music are chapters or bookmarks in your life story. So like that's why you hear something for me like the 80s or 90s, boom. Time machine. I'm in the moment. I remember who I was, what I was feeling, who I was dating, what I was driving, whatever it was, the whole thing comes flooding back. What's wild, and I'd love for you to share it, like that experience for people in an environment or in a room where it's compressed. What it, from the experience of the person there versus the facilitator. Can you describe like what is that like? I'm like, I'm in, man. I want to experience what you're talking about.
Love it. We'd love to have you. So you're talking about for the person who's laying there and going into meditation, experiencing the sound. You know, when you talked about the way music affects you, and you know, as you're talking, I'm actually like, I love winging these things because I learn a lot about myself when I don't think and I just speak. And what I'm realizing is I was so disconnected from my emotional experience for most of my life. It was never safe for me to feel my emotions in my mind, just to, for whatever reason. Again, probably lots of people could assess me psychologically from the outside, but music was the place I could go to feel. And it was interesting because someone lent me their feeling, right? When I would hear a song, they would lend me their feeling. They go like, Nick, you may not be able to feel the sadness you feel right now, but don't worry. I have a song full of that emotion that you can listen to and you're going to feel it. You're going to feel it through me. And that's what an amazing facilitator does, is they actually say like, right now, you may not have the access to yourself. And what we call it, like in this work, we call it self-energy. When you're in your self-energy, you're like, it's like parts work. Like you're compassionate and you're curious and you're clear, like your best self. When you think of your best days, when you're like, damn, I'm just happy and here and grounded and powerful. Most people lose access to that a lot. And as a facilitator, we get to lend that to you for that moment. It's like, look, you may not know how to navigate yourself and you may not know what you're feeling, but I'm going to lend you the clarity of this moment so you can let the sound come into your ears. And you're going to notice, wow, I resonated with that instrument, but not that one. Well, it's because that one instrument that you did resonate with was letting you know what's going on in your body that you couldn't even get to.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful. It's like the instruments will speak to you and you'll go, not that one, but that one, or a song, not that one, not wow, that one. Play that song on repeat. I don't know what it is about that song, but my whole body is resonating with what I'm hearing. And so I do think that's one of the most beautiful things, is we are truly lending access. We are lending access to an emotion, to an experience that we don't understand until it happens. And the brain is going like, oddly enough, this just feels right. And then the whole system goes, zhoof, and you have like this beautiful mind-body connection in these experiences. So what is it? It really is this moment of like, here you are laying down, going inward in the dark, going like, what the hell is this? What am I doing here? How am I supposed to do this? Like, what is the process? And then all of a sudden you just start to notice like, wow, I'm breathing differently. And I feel something in my body, or like I feel a swelling in my belly, or my chest feels like it's expanding or contracting, or I can't breathe for a moment, or it feels like there's something stuck in my throat. It just starts to like bring this awareness of all these things that we've disconnected through most of our lives. And if you bring that curiosity to that moment, it like your body will start to tell you like, oh, this is what you're feeling. And you just didn't even know it. So it is a wild, it's so hard to describe it. And again, I hope you do it someday soon. And I think it's just one of the biggest gifts you can give someone is music being at the center of almost every spiritual or religious practice through all of time. Dancing, chanting, singing, playing, whatever that is, music has always been a centerpiece in bringing us to the connection to whatever we think is, whether it's ourself and our inner experience, or it's source or God or universe or whatever that thing is. Music is a gateway to a deeper understanding of just what is.
Mm.
And that's what we're trying to create, is like, I don't care what you think about me, but if you walk out of there saying, I know myself just a little bit better, then I've done my job.
I'm sold, man. Let's do it. That's awesome. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm just curious, and then we can move on because I know we have to land this bird. It's funny. I use that, but typically I don't have a pilot or a CEO to be an aviation company. But yeah, we'll have to land this bird. I know we have limited time left here, but is it a one-on-one? I have headphones, or is it a group? Is it a one to, is it to many? What is the typical setup?
Oh, fantastic question. So, I mean, there are people that do it one-on-one, and you get into like tuning forks and all kinds of stuff where they'll like hold tuning forks on different parts of the body. Then you have like people where there's 100 people in the room and they're just playing a bunch of big instruments. For me personally, I play to groups of about 8 or 9, and I'm playing gongs, chimes, bowls, guitar, charango, flutes. I mean, it's like I'm probably playing 30 instruments, a variation of 30 instruments, depending on what the room needs. Mm. So yeah, this is not headphones at all. This is like, we're actually, people in this work are actually playing the instruments.
I love it, man. I can only imagine the vibe. That's great. Literally, the vibration, right? It's all about frequencies, what we're talking about here, which is like another conversation, another podcast, because I'm like, as you're talking, I'm like, man, I want to talk about frequencies, but we have limited time here. Brother, let's get to the final segments of the show. Which one of my favorites, dude, is embracing the F word. And I know you shared a lot of vulnerable moments here already. Anything you can share when we talk about the F word, we are talking about failure for anyone who knows the show. Something that you learned, a life lesson or a business lesson through failure that you can share with the audience.
Oh, man. I failed a lot. And there's just so many things that run to the surface when we say that. But I think it's more, when I think of failure now, I think of how much I resisted it instead of just leaning into it. That like when I've been trying to define, like, why did I suffer certain periods of my life? It's because I was unwilling to admit that I'd failed at something. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I blew it. It's fine. I blew it. And I also know I'm going to change now. I'm going to like take the lesson and move on and find a different way to do it and try it again. But every time I really struggled, it was when I would not look at myself really and say like, yeah, that was a failure. It's okay. Good on you. In fact, fail 9 more times really quickly, and I promise the 10th will be a win. But it's like when you're holding on to this thing and denying the failure and denying and denying and denying, you're like, all right, fine. Like you've probably heard the universe will tap you on the shoulder once, then it'll maybe push you on the back a little bit, then it'll slap you in the face, then it'll punch you in the face, right? It's like, just listen to the tap on the shoulder and move on with the lesson. So that's my feeling around failure, is I'm trying to be humble enough that I can embrace the failure and not identify with the external thing that happened as part of my self-esteem.
Yeah. Yeah. How often do you, or how much time, if you do, take to reflect on something when you're like, oh man, why am I feeling this pain? Oh, failure. Do you reflect on it to kind of like extract the lesson? Because that's the really the tough part. It's like, what the hell did I learn out of that?
I journal a lot. In fact, I do a really interesting practice called non-dominant handwriting, where I write questions with my right hand and then I answer it with my left hand. And it was taught to me by a buddy of mine, and he said, the thing that's beautiful about that, when you write with your non-dominant hand, you bypass all of your typical rational mind. And so I'll say like, why did I do this? And then the left hand will say such crazy wisdom bombs. Like, it's just like, where did this come from? Is this really something I wrote? And so lately that's been a way I process a lot of it. And believe me when I tell you, there is still a part of me that is so afraid of the fact that if I screw up, it means I'm a piece of shit. And it does take me time. Like even, you know, this morning, like I say some stupid comment to my fiance and she calls me out on it, and I did not apologize. It took me a moment. I'm like, I'm going to have to do that later. I'm not ready yet to admit that I screwed up and it was a failure of mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I relate to that so much, brother. Man, this has been really great, man. I love continuing the conversation with you. I love that you're close by. You know, I'm in Central Jersey. I have an airport literally 5 minutes from my house. So we need
That's
to
right.
And brother, let's figure things out. I want my people to reach out to you. And if they do want to reach out, get to know more, especially sound facilitation or they need a private, you know, ride, how can they reach you?
So a few things. From the aviation side, you could check out VenturaJet.com, or you could, you know, again, find me on LinkedIn or Instagram for any of this stuff. I mean, all my worlds collide. So, you could just find me, Nick Tarascio, on LinkedIn or Nick Tarascio on Instagram. And then you could also check out the podcast if you're just curious about, you know, the content I'm putting out there all about finding fulfillment.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening to this, you are a podcast, listener, audience. So jump into the Dream Beyond. It's a podcast I highly recommend. So Nick, it's been a pleasure, man. Always great to chat. And I hope to see you soon.
All right, man. Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K. @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.